Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Relax. Cross your fingers.
Let's just move forward like everything's great.
Okay, cool.
Everyone quick. Everyone panic.
No. Don't. Okay.
Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did.
Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Bethany. Yes, Bethany. Your fall decorating, decaf coffee drinking, I'm bringing my cold weather wardrobe out of retirement, whether it's cold out or not, friend.
And I'm Kathleen, your Joni Mitchell listening, fresh fig eating, did you see Unwell on Netflix, friend?
And every week, Kathleen and I meet up to discuss our lives and what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. This is a very special week, Kathleen.
Ba-ba-da-da.
Ba-ba-da-da.
Yes. Well, in honor of Labor Day coming up, and it's a holiday weekend, we are releasing our very first installment in a regular occurring series called What's Your Job?
What's Your Job?
Want to say it with me on the count of three? Ready? One, two, three.
What's your job?
Yes.
And I may or may not produce a jingle.
Oh my goodness, dreams do come true, Bethany. If you need help with that, please let me know because I've always wanted to have the same job as Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey.
I forgot they sang jingles. And if I do produce a jingle, Charlotte, will you put it in here?
What is it? What's your job?
Kathleen, how is your week going so far as we record this on a Monday?
You know what? My week is going really well. I feel good about this Monday. Yesterday, I got to see some family, and we ate fresh figs that I put in the pan with a little bit of honey, a little bit of balsamic. I kind of let them caramelize, and we spread them over Triscuit. Are you familiar with Triscuits? Like, do you buy Triscuits on the rig?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I don't really buy them that much, but I am aware. I mean, they're an American institution, you know?
The rosemary and olive oil flavor.
Yes.
With these like fresh figs that I caramelized over the crackers. Holy mackerel. That was really good.
Who procured the fresh figs and where did you get them?
I got them at the farmer's market upstate when I was house sitting.
How was that? You were like, okay, first of all, you went hiking again and you off-roaded it again and you got lost on your way to a graveyard again.
Yes. Yes. Yes, Bethany. It was so exciting. We saw a rattlesnake.
Really? There's rattlesnakes upstate?
I was in danger. It was so fun.
Spoken like a true city girl. I was in danger.
It was so fun. And we got to feed the chickens and water the plants and sit outside in the backyard, which is something I don't get to do that often because I don't have a backyard. So, you know,
Yeah.
What have you and Dennis been up to this weekend besides Dennis injuring his penis?
Yeah, Dennis injured his penis. I texted Kathleen last night and I said, Kathleen, remind me to talk about how Dennis injured his penis over the weekend. So he has been working out a lot, which means he has to foam roll a lot. Like his muscles are super achy and foam rollers are just the best. Yeah. And he especially has to foam roll his inner thighs because, you know, if you spread your legs, like, you know, do it in the comfort of your own home, if you touch, there's like a giant muscle like inside and it almost feels like a bone. It's so like thick and ropey. So he has to really foam roll the dickens out of it. And it involves laying on his stomach, putting his leg out to the side and foam rolling up and down that long muscle. And apparently he wears these super flowy, like monk pants.
Oh my God. So his junk wasn't in place. His junk was just kind of doing like a floaty aroundy type situation.
Yeah, exactly. And and the thing about these pants is that like they have a really wide, they don't have a waistband. He has to like pull them in and then tie them at the waist with a rope.
Ooh, it's so earthy of him.
I know. So there's a lot of folds. And so he felt something go under the foam roller and his brain immediately thought that he was rolling over like a lump of fabric. And so he pushed hard and then rolled back, which means he rolled over his own penis twice and he screamed in pain. And I came running over and I was doing that hovering thing where you don't know if you're allowed to laugh or not. Like, yeah. I couldn't tell if he had to go to the hospital or not. And he was like leaning on the floor and he was like, ow. Ow, I rolled over my penis. Ow, and I'm like, are you okay? I don't know. Do you have to go to the hospital? No. Can I talk about this on the podcast? I guess. And
right away, you're like, right podcast away. Fodder, podcast fodder.
So I guess he just rolled over the top of like the just the tip. He just rolled over the tip, but he rolled over it twice. So don't foam roll your junk, guys.
Dennis hurt his penis.
He did. Dennis hurt his penis. But other than that, we had a great weekend.
Oh my goodness.
It was really good. I terrorized him all weekend and I will talk more about it in what we learned this week at the end of the show.
Can you imagine going to the emergency room and being like, oh, doctor, I foam rolled my dick.
I feel like it's the least scandalous of the penis problems they've seen. There was a story a few weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, about a guy who had to go in because he had put an iPhone charging cord up his penis.
What?
And it got stuck in his like intestines and it was causing cramping, but he didn't tell them why he was feeling cramping. And it was like a week later they discovered that there was a phone charging cord in his penis.
Oh, I mean, come on, man. I wonder if he plugged it in. He's trying to like give himself little shocks.
I think he was sounding. I don't know much about sounding.
What's sounding mean?
I think it's the insertion of items into the penis for the purposes of like an internal resonating pain pleasure. I don't know. You're looking it up. What does it say?
Sounding, also known as urethral sounding, is sometimes referred to as penis or cock sounding or stuffing. And this is when you take a metal rod called a sound and you slide it up your urethra. People use it for both pleasure and pain. Once you get used to it, you can easily accomplish both. Personally, I'm not into the pain thing. It's like to send vibrations up your urethra.
What I'm picturing is someone putting like a super long rod up and then like the part that's still sticking out, hitting it with a mallet like you would a tuning fork.
Yes.
And it going like, wong, wong, wong. I don't know. No, I don't want to like shame anyone. If it's your thing, it's your thing. But I feel like a phone charging cable, probably not the best.
You're right.
Because probably not what that's for.
We should not shame anyone for anything. But this is bizarre and kinkier than I could ever imagine.
Kathleen, may I propose what I think that we should do for next week in terms of the show topic?
Okay, hit me with it.
Okay, I think that we should choose each other's topic to research. No,
okay, but like you're gonna make me research some sort of Victorian shit. It's gonna be real weird and real boring. I'm just kidding.
I mean, you're so mean, but also you're probably not off the mark, but also I know exactly what I want you to research.
Well, what do you want me to talk about next episode?
Okay, well, I talked to my dad over the weekend. He called, which was lovely, and we got on the subject of presidents. I'm not really sure why.
Okay.
I
can tell you why, but okay.
And I asked him, Eisenhower, you know, met with the aliens. And my dad goes, he totally did. Eisenhower brokered a deal with the aliens and letting the aliens test on humans and animals in exchange for their technology. My dad says this unprompted. And I was like,
what?
Yes, he did. So my dad and I both fully believe that Eisenhower met with the aliens. So, Kathleen, for next week, okay. I want you to research the conspiracy theory that President Eisenhower met with the Greys to broker an arrangement for research in exchange for technology.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to give you props because I'm actually really excited about this. I had no idea. And that's really cool. Okay. So I get to pick a topic for you.
Yes. If you say Ugg boots, I'm going to punch you in the Skype face.
Who invented the pumpkin spice latte?
Okay. I will research it.
How to perfect the half bun. You know, like the
you perfected the half it. Bun. You're wearing it today and it looks amazing.
What do boys, how can I join a coven?
Oh.
Or What kind of witches wear Uggs?
Okay. I'm going to do who invented the pumpkin spice latte.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, great.
That's what I'll do.
Oh, this is so exciting. We get to pick our own topics. This is like, this is like when you let your husband dress you and and he doesn't know how to put anything together, and he like puts you in slippers and a ball gown, and you're like, no, honey.
Yeah,
no.
He gives you like a belt clip for your cell phone.
Yeah.
Do dads still wear those?
Dads sure do. Yeah, and Champion sweatpants. They love Champion sweatpants.
They do.
Should we just give a little background as to what we're going to talk about today?
Yes, absolutely. Kathleen, this was your brilliant idea, so why don't you go ahead and kind of talk about what's coming up?
So this episode was inspired by a taste bud who texted in after I was talking about how I took a picture of my butt pimple and it ended up in my cloud, and then the computer guy was going to see it when he was fixing my computer. This taste bud texted and she's like, ladies, I have to tell you this. I have a friend whose job it is to clean out the iClouds, or just clouds in general, of rich people and get rid of anything in there that could be used against them should they ever get hacked.
Wait, did we talk about this yet on the pod or not?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. But anyway, fascinating.
It's fascinating because I was like, the non-disclosure agreement that she must have to sign is probably insane, because whatever money she could earn from a tabloid to sell those awful iCloud photos of famous people, it has to, like, the penalty of disclosing those pictures has to be higher than anything she could ever earn from a magazine.
Just insanity. And also, like, I've got friends with really strange, cool jobs. Like, I listened to my friend Kristen the other day talk for 15 minutes about bath mats and what kind of profit you make when you put out a bath mat. Like,
jeez.
She was just so passionate about it. So anyway, I was like, okay, for Labor Day, let's do a special edition episode called What's Your Job?
What's Your Job?
What is it?
What's your job?
Uh-oh.
So we're chatting with two people today that we actually already know, funnily enough. And I guess today's episode theme is jobs in TV.
Yes. So I don't know what order we're going to do it in, but we're talking to Kristen. She works in unscripted reality TV. She comes up with ideas and like helps pull together the cast and create like pitches for new reality television, which is fascinating.
And Kristen's in my book club. So she's like, it was very cool to interview a personal friend.
Yes. We're also talking to Stephanie. She is actually an intern, an old intern of Kathleen's and mine, she's just wonderful. And she works for the web team for the Oxygen Network, and especially with true crime. And so she does a lot of work and like breaking news stories and working with true crime TV shows.
She's a true crime reporter. That's a dream job of so many people. All right. So shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
But first,
Kathleen.
Yes.
So I went through my shoe collection over the weekend, and I had to throw away a bunch of my flats that were really dirty beyond repair, or just made my feet hurt when I wore them.
Were they stanky stanky?
They were just gross and ugly. But the shoes that got to stay were my Rothy's.
That doesn't surprise me, because Rothy's are totally washable. You can just throw them in the washing machine, let them air dry, and they come out looking like brand new. And that's why they are one of my favorite pairs of shoes ever. I actually have multiple pairs.
You definitely do. And I have a pair of their loafers in mocha. And because they're made with recycled water bottles, they've kept over 50 million single-use plastic bottles out of landfills.
Yeah, walking in my Rothy's is like walking on clouds. It's cloud-like comfort. P.S. Have you seen their new lace-up shoe?
No, wait, what? Hold on.
Stop what you're doing. Go to their website. It's called The Lace Up.
Ooh, that's a good name.
They come in white. They come in navy blue. I love a great, just plain white lace up sneaker. And now that Rothy's has one, I'm definitely going to be purchasing it, because I'm hard on my feet. I'm hard on my sneakers. I can never keep anything clean. And there's zero break-in time when it comes to Rothy's. You never get any blisters.
Yeah, because they're woven as one single piece, so no painful seams. By the way, these lace-ups are darling.
Right?
Rothy's come in an ever-changing array of colors and prints and patterns, and they're available in a range of styles, too.
And Rothy's always comes with free shipping and free returns. So why not try them out?
Check out all of the amazing shoes. Oh, and they have bags now, too. Available right now at Rothy's.com/taste.
That's Rothy's.com, Rothy's.com/taste.
Style and sustainability meet to create your new favorites. Head to Rothy's.com/taste today.
What is it? What's your job?
Welcome to an Acquired Taste podcast, Stephanie Gomulka, Emmy Award-winning true crime reporter, Stephanie Gomulka.
Thank you. Oh my God.
We're so excited to have you for our first ever What's Your Job specialty episode.
What's your job?
My job is I am a dot-com correspondent with Oxygen. So I work with the digital team, and it's associated obviously with the True Crime Network. So we work with a lot of breaking crime news, following the biggest Oxygen shows, a lot of Skypes. I'm normally not in a closet.
You do look like you're in some sort of bunker, which is really appropriate for the true crime aspect of your occupation.
Yes, I was not trying to be very on brand for that, for this choice. I did not know there was going to be video, but it works. It works. Make it work.
So a little bit of history, a gentle Acquired Taste listener. We know Stephanie from our radio days where she got her start as an intern. And now she's the face of the Oxygen Network. Would that be appropriate to call you that, Stephanie?
I think no. Maybe for, I work with the dot-com team. I think it overblows my personality there if I say I'm the face.
I'm always seeing you on Instagram. You're like filming stuff and you introduce shows on TV, right?
Yes and no. Mainly, yes, we do have a social series called True Crime Buzz where we follow breaking crime news and the latest updates. We also follow Oxygen shows from Kim Kardashian West the Justice Project to License to Kill, which has new episodes. We talked to Terry Dubrow recently, which was kind of cool. And then for Oxygen shows, I don't introduce them, but sometimes if there's a breaking update, I'll follow a case, let's say after a show airs and maybe someone's released or there's an update in a case where, you know, a serial killer is caught. I mean, that's very rare, but we'll follow those updates and stay on top of them.
So you're like a news anchor for breaking criminal news, like breaking murders.
Basically, yeah. Crime reporter. Yeah.
Stephanie, so, I mean, we knew you from the morning show. We knew you as an intern. How did you go from, you know, your intern days to a pretty high profile job on a really well-established, well-known network? I mean, for a lot of people, that is a dream job for being, you know, pretty newly out of college. How did you get there?
Yeah, it was, in hindsight, it looks really quick, but it was kind of a hard and long road. I was so excited to intern at the Elvis Duran show. You guys were such great role models. And I was just saying before, like, I was totally one of the nerdy interns. So when I left, you know, I didn't know what kind of job I wanted. I did love Elvis Duran and being in entertainment and things like that. But I ended up kind of following this journalism path. When I graduated, my first job ended up being a booker at ABC, which was true crime, kind of, basically. And I kind of fell into it and I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe I don't like this. Maybe I just want to work in local news. And I left and I went into local news at New York One. And that was really tough, you know, long days where you're covering the story instead of calling, you know, the victim of a crime or a parent, you're knocking on their door or you're covering the fire. And that was life-changing and incredibly difficult. And it was a lot. And then I randomly kind of was talking to this person and it was very serendipitous. And they were asking me about my job. I'm like, well, I work in local news. I used to work in true crime. She was like, true crime? I just saw this job posting. And it was very serendipitous. Like I was waiting for an Uber. If the Uber was on time, I wouldn't have talked to her.
Wow.
And wow. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And even my dad was supposed to pick me up from where I was. And he missed the turn, you know, parking in the Lincoln Tunnel. And he ended up going to the tunnel instead of going to Chelsea. So I was like, I guess I'll get an Uber and I'll meet you outside the tunnel. And in that 20 minutes, I talked to her, heard about the job. And then, of course, like I went through the application process and all of these different steps. But it was so great. And I always think, like, imagine if I wasn't there at that time, if I didn't talk to her, if my dad was on time. And now 2 years later, I have this dream job. So for anyone listening, keep going.
It is amazing.
You know, that is a testament to how fate really works. Like, yeah. I 100% believe in fate working its ways. And that is incredible.
It was crazy. I think about that all the time.
Going back to when you were a booker for ABC, for people who don't know what that job is, can you kind of explain what you're doing, what your days look like?
For a booker, Let's say, you know, there's a town hall that ABC is doing, or there's a case that we're covering. And what you do is you book the people. So if it's a case, you'll book the parents, maybe of sadly a murder victim, or you'll go to a trial and you'll try to talk to different subjects if you're able to, or you'll cover the case. And they kind of call it editorial. So a lot of people think that only means writing, but it also means, you know, booking sources and talking to them and developing relationships with them. And it's definitely a tough job.
Yeah.
I was not someone who could like pick up the phone and call anyone at first. And it gave me a lot of anxiety, but you learn to do it and you learn that people do like to tell their story, which is kind of encouraging and awesome. And you see a lot of strength in that. And sometimes they don't, and that's okay too, because it's their truth and their story and you got to respect that. But it definitely was kind of a crazy first job for sure.
So the reason I asked is because, yeah, doing that, especially in the realm of crime, true crime, you know, social issues, I imagine was a very sensitive job and probably a very difficult job emotionally at times. What are some of the lessons that you learned from that, that you have taken into your life and into your career?
I mean, so many. Mainly, like what I was just saying, was the strength that so many families have. I get asked a lot about, you know, working in true crime. Does it affect me personally? And of course it does. And the reason why you can keep going and keep calling and talking to different families when it's such a difficult topic is the strength that they have when they, you know, remember a family member. And, you know, I talk to my parents a lot about, you know, dad, and he hates this so much, but I'd be like, dad, if I called you, you know, what's the type of producer you would want to talk to? And those have really helped me and grounded me, because it's not just a story for them. It's their life.
Yeah.
So that weighs heavily on me. And then also when I was at New York One, you know, it's different talking to someone on the phone versus having to knock right after it happened on their door, or talk to them at the scene of a crash or something. And I've had to do that. And that also changes your life, sometimes in small ways, sometimes in big ways. And, you know, learning to talk to people, not as a reporter, but as a person. And that totally has totally changed my life for sure.
Has there ever been a story that was just so absolutely devastating you just went home and cried after a long day?
Oh my gosh, all the time.
Is there a technique that you use to sort of leave some of this stuff at work and go home and try and live a normal, happy life?
Yes and no. So for ABC, sometimes I got to travel for cases. One was in Colorado, and I was lucky enough to work with, you know, a veteran journalist there. So that it's harder to not bring home.
Yeah.
Because you're there, you're in it, and, you know, you're talking to all of these people, and it's just such a difficult thing to see their pain, especially even if it's just watching testimony at a trial. It's very difficult to not bring that home. And even now, when I'm researching, you know, a case, whether it be a serial killer, maybe talking to a family, it's still hard to not bring that home. Just because you're thinking about it, it's kind of, you go through your day, even if it's thinking about grocery shopping, you know, you think about it later. If you have this, you know, life altering conversation, you're going to think about it later, or you hear a really terrifying fact about a serial killer, it's going to follow you just like a horror movie a couple days later. So learning to deal with that in small amounts is big. And, you know, another thing that's kind of funny is, you know, I'm still the person I was before this job. You know, I still love Disney. I still love lighter things. So, you know, when people ask me like my favorite true crime podcast, yes, I listen to Serial and I listen to Martinis and Murder, and I love those podcasts so much. But also I always try to say like other podcasts, like your podcast, 10% Happier with Dan Harris, which is like a meditation podcast, just because I think it's important to think about everyone's mental health, and not only in taking true crime, but also, you know, learning how to deal with that when taking it home. But you still want to take it home, if that makes sense. I don't want to ever forget what those families have said to me and what it means to them to share their story, and remembering, you know, the names of victims, what they were like. I always want to keep that with me. So I hope I never lose that. So it's kind of like a weird balance, but I hope I figured it out in a way, or trying to.
So because this is, you know, tell us about your job, what does your average workday look like now?
You know, my living room is my studio. and I do a lot of it, you know, alone now. But day to day, we would work on, you know, breaking crime stories. I'll write a script, get it approved, and then, you know, we'll shoot the video. I like to edit, so sometimes I'll edit my own videos. So that stuff is kind of similar. It's just now, you know, instead of meeting in person, we'll do it through, you know, Skype or Teams or things like that.
I'm so fascinated when I see you on Instagram setting up your own, like your home video studio with your light and your phone. Like, you shoot these videos on your phone, right? Most of the time?
I do. Normally, so that's one thing that has changed, because normally they have these great cameras. And I was just like, the first week when we were figuring it out, I was like, well, let me just try it on my phone. And then it worked. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I think it's working. And obviously, we figured out some of the other tech things, like, guys, I'm in a closet right now. Obviously, audio isn't the best from home. So there are things that give. But it is, we made it work. And it's kind of amazing.
Has any of the footage that you've shot in your home video studio made it onto television?
So not television, but it has made it to, like, social pages. I think I would actually need a better camera for TV. But it is not always easy. Like, one day, I mean, my brother sometimes will help, or I use a mirror sometimes so I can see if I'm, like, in the frame if I move. But one day I shot a video. It was like, maybe it's 10 minutes of video, and I never hit start.
So I was like,
oh my God, I have to restart. So there are, like, glitches when you're home, but it works out.
As a true crime reporter, what's the first outlet you check in the morning for breaking news?
Oxygen.com.
Yeah.
Actually, I do. We have a lot of talent. So it's not just me. We have a lot of talented writers.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of a collaboration where actually I will be checking in with them. You know, we have, like, kind of a daily tracker and stuff. So we do touch base as a team about the biggest stories. So I do totally check there, and we talk about some of the biggest stories and how I can translate them into video and what we should be following. But otherwise, I check everything. You know, I have subscriptions to local news outlets and national news outlets. I won't shout them all out, but I think it's important to support local journalism.
And I have one more question. Okay, so you and the digital team, you're following breaking news about true crime and murders. So let's say something really awful happens and the news starts reporting a name. And let's just say John Smith. The news is like, John Smith, you know, he's holding hostages in this store in Iowa. Do you and your team automatically go on social media and start trying to figure out the profiles that John Smith has that are public and pulling information from them so you can kind of get the scoop?
Yes. I think what would happen is, like, we'd probably have a writer follow the story, maybe call law enforcement to see what's the reportable information. And we have an incredible photo editor, Nicole, who would totally be looking at his social media profiles to see if there's any pictures we're allowed to use and stuff like that. Yeah, I would say we definitely would follow a breaking news story like that and find out the best way to report on it.
I don't know about you guys, but the second someone's name goes public, I'm on Facebook trying to figure out which profile is theirs. And then I'm, like, following what people are writing on their profile. Like, we're watching you on the news right now, you piece of shit. Like, you know,
minus the commentary. I think mainly the thing would be pictures in that scenario of, like, before it's taken down, is there a profile? But it's usually everyone's got a down pat, I feel like, on our team.
That's amazing. And so then you just, like, you search for the numbers to call, like the non-emergency police numbers. Like, these are all the secrets that I would never even know to think of.
So it depends. I cover breaking news, but when it's video, it's, like, probably not exactly in the moment where I'm the one calling. It depends on the story for sure. But
sure.
People call, and or you just figure out what's the reportable information and things like that. But at ABC, maybe if it was a bigger story, that's totally a scenario where, we'd work as a team and be like, okay, it's a bigger story. Can we get some bookers to help? And it's like, call eyewitnesses if there's something that's happening. I was thinking of scenarios where I had to do that, but I don't want to mix up news headlines because it's been a while.
Sure. I was just wondering, were you with Oxygen when the Golden State Killer was caught? I feel like that was a couple years ago.
I was not, but it was, I think it might have been, I guess, the April before I joined the team.
Okay.
I think they did have, Oxygen did have a special on it. I believe Stephanie Gosk was the correspondent.
Okay.
And Paul Holes, who is a retired cold case investigator who helped with some of the genetic genealogy in the case, was also within the special, and I've spoken to him about the case. We also spoke to Janelle Cruz's sister, who's the last known victim, Michelle Cruz, who advocated for her sister and also started mentoring Kelsey German, who is the sister of another person in the Delphi murders case. And it was a pretty inspiring story to see her help Kelsey.
So you really do get to see, once all of the cameras go away and everyone has kind of moved on with their lives, you really do get to see what these lives look like afterwards, and not just the negative, but really you do get to see the positive sometimes.
Yeah, you do. And I would say that is the best part for me of true crime, is seeing the strength of these families and survivors stand up to what is the darkest part of humanity. And they still have hope and they still have dreams and they push their family members' memories alive. And that's wonderful. Like, when I hear Golden State Killer, I think of Janelle Cruz first now, which is great. And that's because of her sister, which is important. And
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
You know, along the same lines of the darkest part of humanity, because you're following these really gruesome stories all the time, do you feel like your spidey senses, no matter where you go, are always heightened because you're just really very aware of the bad things that happen to people all the time?
Yeah. And I have this conversation with my cousins all the time. They're also like my, like a group of my best friends are my cousins. And they, you know, it's kind of funny because they're always like, you're so bubbly and you have like the darkest job. And one of the things that's really hard is we talk about their dating lives. I've had the same boyfriend for a while, so mine is less interesting. But like, they'll be telling me a story and I'm like, I'm sorry, you have to please nip that in the bud. He has a lot of red flags. I'm not saying he's a serial killer. He's definitely not. But he gives me a feeling that I'm like, I've heard this before, and they hate that. Sometimes I have to like reel myself back because I'm like, okay, Steph, you're just being a little bit dramatic because you're thinking about things that are not going to happen. So I run into that sometimes. And my boyfriend also is very like, you're very paranoid, but it's okay. Comes with the job.
You know what though? You have to. You just never know. Yeah. Well, and that's why like our intro has me saying I would be a Ted Bundy victim, because like I would have fallen for the charm. I absolutely would have helped him carry his books. I would have fallen for it. And
it's scary.
It just is a good reminder. People are out there. You got to be careful. Yeah,
it is scary.
One day we'll all be reading about Bethany. One day Stephanie will be reporting on Bethany.
No, God, no.
I have certain pictures already picked out just in case the worst happens. And I actually tweeted to Josh Mankiewicz from Dateline and said, please hold these files. And he said, okay. And so so it's all taken care of.
Oh, I love Josh. That's so funny.
Oof.
There's also an elephant in the room that we're not addressing. And that is that you got to interview Kim freaking Kardashian girlfriend.
I did, right before this past January I interviewed her. She had a special, just for context for anyone listening, on Oxygen, Kim Kardashian West, The Justice Project. You can watch it now if you want, oxygen.com. But yeah, I did, and she was fantastic. And it was great to speak with her about her journey in criminal justice reform, because that's another part of true crime. People, either they don't talk about it, they think it's not connected, or they think of justice as this very narrow path, and it's not. People who have reformed, and should they get second chances? And that is something that Kim has been working in. And it was really I was really honored to be able to dive into that with her, for sure.
It is something that, you know, there are other countries that are more focused on rehabilitation of their criminals and second chances. And our country is definitely one of someone needs to be punished and then we all move on. And I do appreciate that that is a focus, and you know, the focus of true crime brings to light, like, so-and-so got 15 years for possession of marijuana, where another person murdered someone and got off, right? Or, you know, parole or whatever.
Yeah.
It's an interesting debate and an interesting conversation about, are we helping these people get better, or are we just making ourselves feel better that we've locked someone away only to probably make them worse.
I 100% agree. And the sad thing is there's so many stories like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you think it's just this one amazing story. It's a whole system of stories. A person that's in the Kim Kardashian West documentary is Professor Mark Howard at Georgetown. And I just actually Skyped him last week for a story that we're working on. But the work that he does is so critical. And he brought Georgetown into the prison. And there's so many stories of reform or crazy sentences that, you know, maybe if they had a little bit more money, they wouldn't still be behind bars. Or maybe they really reformed and changed because they were a little kid with no resources or opportunities before. And it's so inspiring and so important. So it was really wonderful, like, to see a part of that journey and to hopefully get the word out about more of those stories.
Last question. What is the one thing about being a true crime reporter that you want people to know?
Oh, that's so hard. Okay. This is going to, I hope that no one comes for me, but as someone who does have to, like, when I watch a story, I think about how I would report on it or what would I do differently. And one thing that bothers me, please don't come for me, people that love true crime, but like, I watch Dateline. I love Dateline. I love ABC 2020. I love those shows, but I hate when people are like, oh, this is an old episode. And I'm always like, please don't say that, because maybe someone else hasn't seen it or heard that story. And I don't want there to be new episodes. Like, if no other murders happened, I would be so happy. Yeah. I'll switch careers, or I'll focus on cases that haven't been solved or missing cases, because there's so many that there doesn't have to be a new episode and we would still have so much stuff to uncover mm-hmm. and to deal with. Or maybe it's the prison reform. So I would say that. I would be like, come on, guys, we don't need a new episode. Let's watch this and maybe it's unsolved, or maybe we should just remember who was lost and taken for a Friday night.
That is a great point. This is not just sitting back. This isn't just entertainment. These are lives. These are real lives. That's a really good point.
But I get it. I don't judge, just because I also love true crime fans. I think without them, a lot of cases wouldn't get a spotlight. And sometimes there are people, obviously, there are people that would, but there are a lot of people that wouldn't watch a PowerPoint on a case. So I totally get it. And I love true crime documentaries. I watch all of them.
Since we have an expert on the line, I want to put to bed once and for all, do you think Katy Perry is JonBenet Ramsey?
Oh, whoa. I have not heard that conspiracy theory.
You haven't?
What?
I have not. I'm kind of obsessed with it now that you said it. And I will be doing a deep dive today.
Reddit thinks that they're the same person.
Wow. As a reporter, I'll say I don't have the facts. And as a person, I'll say I am busy until 6 o'clock tonight.
It's a really fun rabbit hole to fall down.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Stephanie. Thank you so much for joining us today. Give yourself a shout out. Where can people follow you on Instagram and on Twitter and Facebook? Do you have a website?
So you can follow my social media handle, which is GOTMULKA, Got Mocha. My name's Mocha.
Like Got Milk.
Yes. Gotcha. Some people don't get the pun. Or our Oxygen social pages. That's where True Crime Buzz is. And obviously, Oxygen.com.
Live from your closet.
Live.
Like it's a bunker.
From my closet.
Stephanie, thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
Kathleen, over the weekend, Dennis looked over my shoulder and he said, oh, you're really far on Best Fiends. And that was an understatement, because I am on level 1,128.
Holy, Ben, you're officially like 300 levels above me.
It's because Best Fiends is part of my anxiety toolbox. When I'm feeling like my brain is broken or I'm thinking too much, I pull out Best Fiends, and it's a way for my brain to just relax and focus on something other than everything that's falling apart in my life.
Oh my goodness, I hear you. I'm not a games person. I'm not a video games person. I've never played games on my phone before. But now that I've been introduced to Best Fiends, I'm like, man, this is the game that I've been wanting my whole entire life.
Totally. So Best Fiends is a unique and exciting puzzle game. It's unlike other games out there. It's a color matching game like you've probably played before, but they update it with new levels every month. It never gets old. And you get to collect a ton of cute characters, and you don't have to have the internet to play, so you don't have to worry about Wi-Fi access or using your cell data.
Can I admit something to you?
What?
I've been watching more shows on Hulu because they have commercial breaks, because I can play Best Fiends during the commercial breaks. I'm like, no Netflix tonight. I need to play Best Fiends during the commercial breaks. Let's put something on Hulu.
I think that's brilliant. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play offline, like we said.
And with over 100 million downloads and a ton of five-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play.
Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
That's like Friends without the R. Best Fiends. Bethany.
Yes?
A while ago on the podcast, I was talking about how I'm so into this new book series, A Discovery of Witches.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to them on my wireless Raycon earbuds, and it's amazing because I just walk around the house, make the bed, make some dinner, and I have my book in my ears the whole time.
Because Neil, your husband, probably doesn't want to listen to the book that you're listening to.
Yeah.
And we love the earbuds from Raycon.
You have to check out their newest model. It's the Everyday E25 earbuds. They are their best earbuds yet. They're 6 hours of playing time, seamless Bluetooth pairing. There's more bass and there's a more compact design. So you get that like noise isolating fit. It makes you feel like there's nothing else going on around you.
And they're great earbuds, but you don't have to pay a gajillion dollars for them. Raycon earbuds are less than half of the price of the other guys.
And the company was founded by Ray J. That's Brandy's brother.
Celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Melissa Etheridge, and Brandy are obsessed with these products.
Oh, Brandy uses her brother's wireless earbuds? That's cool.
So give them a try. Raycon has a 45-day free return policy, so you can make sure they're the pair of wireless earbuds for you.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off of your order at buyraycon.com/taste.
That's buy, B-U-Y, as in purchase it. Buy it. Buyraycon.com/taste for a special 15% discount on Raycon wireless earbuds. Make sure to check it out now while the deal's running.
Buyraycon.com/taste. What is it?
What's your job?
Uh-oh.
All right, taste buds. We have a member of my very own book club, and she makes reality shows.
Hi, Kristen.
Welcome to the pod, Kristen.
Hey, everyone.
How's it going? How's quarantine treating you?
The honest answer is it's a roller coaster. The regular answer I give people is it's a blessing in disguise.
Uh-huh.
So, Kristen, what is your official job title? And you don't have to say the name of the company that you work at if you don't want to. That's totally cool with us.
I'm the director of development.
For television shows, right? For reality shows.
Yes. So the director of development. Development is a weird, I call it like the intro to a book. So development, we are talking to people, we are exploring places, we are diligent readers of all things, trying to figure out who, what, where, when should be the next TV show. So I think of it as the introduction because the book wouldn't exist without us. The TV show wouldn't exist without development. We'll get a tiny credit at the end of the show. A lot of times what we're doing is creating the concept, the look you see, the story will follow, and then we're passing it off to showrunners, field producers to execute sort of the vision we've collaborated on. So it's a strange but really exciting job.
So what's the official term? Is it unscripted television? Is that the official term for it?
I like to say unscripted because it's a little less scary, especially since I was doing a lot of true crime for a while when you're talking to detectives and those who have been behind bars or people in the justice system, and you say unscripted, the reaction is much more favorable. Whereas when you say reality, people think of table flipping.
Yeah. Yeah. The Kardashians, et cetera.
Yeah. And I've worked on that too. But
you've done some table flipping in your life?
I personally have not, but that would be fun.
Oh, you haven't lived until you flipped the table, my friend.
I mean, I dream of the day where I could just have a backyard and set up all of these foldable tables and I can just go and get and scream and flip them. Oh, wait, I think I just thought of an amazing business idea. Bye-bye, axe throwing. Hello, table flipping places, right?
Do you have a perimeter of fireplaces set up that I can throw a glass of scotch into when I'm angry? Yeah.
Kristen, what are some of the shows that are on TV right now that you've worked on?
I've worked on a lot of History Channel shows. So Pawn Stars is probably the biggest name.
Wow.
Alone, I had a small role on. Counting Cars back in the day, American Restoration. I did Cutting It in the ATL on WeTV. I've done a lot of Bravo shows, like there was a Bethany and Frederick show recently where they did real estate. Mm-hmm. So it sort of runs the gamut of programming that I've worked on. And right now I am in the throes of doing a kids show. So it's all over the place.
Wow. Wait, tell us about that.
I can only tell you a little bit, but it's about kid heroes doing extraordinary things across America.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I've been privy to some of the behind the scenes tales of your job over the years because we're friends IRL. Is that what the teens are saying these days in real life? And you've had some amazing opportunities to talk to people with fascinating stories, and it never makes it to television. Yeah. Like the one that I always come back to were the Mormon sex experts. And what are some of the favorite people and stories that you've spoken to over the years that never made it to TV? And why do some people just not make it to TV?
That's a great question. And if I had the answer to why shows that are amazing don't make it to air, I'd be better at my job. The true answer is it's all about timing.
Yeah.
So it's like, when do you pitch the concept? Who do you pitch it to? Are they having a good day or are they too full after lunch? What's working on TV? All of a sudden you might have something that's really in the zeitgeist and then the zeitgeist shifts. My favorite stories to sort of answer your question, Kathleen, I love the Sex Sisters. That is like my white whale. I think they're phenomenal. The fact that that is not a show is one of my greater disappointments. But, you know, there's another person I'm working with right now who she is like the Erin Brockovich of fertility fraud. Mm. And it's been very challenging to sort of push this one through. And I think a lot of it is it's the packaging. It's the who are we pitching to? How are we pitching? It can be really challenging. And like there's another project I've worked with in the disability space about finding love. Now on Netflix, of course, what's sparking is Love on the Spectrum.
Yeah, I've seen that on my Netflix feed.
We had pitched something very similar in 2016 and just couldn't push it. And everyone kept saying it's too feel good. It's too aspirational, which is a note I get a lot because I believe in aspirational television and I believe people need positive concepts. And if you have such a great platform, you should create content that matters.
Absolutely.
Totally. And I'm sure you guys feel the same way.
Yeah. Like
you're talking about real issues and you're being raw and authentic. And I think, you know, TV has the same responsibility.
So when you're developing a show, do you come up with an idea based off of personalities you find online or do people come to you? Like how does even the first little drop of a television reality show start?
Every show starts differently. So mm-hmm. It might be an article we read. It might be another producer reaches out to us and they have a great concept and they need a partner to execute their vision. I pride myself on finding fascinating people and stories myself just because yeah. My mom's a psychologist, so I have a curiosity about people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every reality show really does start differently. And also, once you bring it to a network, they might pivot that. So that's why it's called development. You might go in with, you know, this is our show, and the network goes, great, but can you do X, Y, and Z? Mm. So like Pawn Stars is a good example. Pawn Stars had been that group, those talents had been pitched before. And not with my former company, Left Field Pictures, but with another, with other production companies. And it wasn't until Left Field Pictures started working with them, brought them into History Channel, where they had never been pitched before, or maybe they had been pitched before, but just not with the hook of historical yeah. objects.
Mm.
And Rick Harrison really is like this Rolodex of history facts. And so they tapped into that and recognized, you know, sort of a pivot. And so that's what happens in development is you might go in like, here's a great shop. And then you realize, oh, I'm pitching to History Channel. We should focus on history. And you pivot and it becomes a historical shop.
I love that idea of a hook because Bethany, that's the same thing for podcasting too. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Like why? And I took a podcasting class at NYU last semester, despite this being my full-time job already. And my professor was like, listen, why are you best adept to tell this story versus someone else? And if you can't answer that question, then this podcast topic is not the podcast topic for you.
Mm-hmm. That's so smart.
it's kind of the same way with reality television. It's all about the angle. Mm-hmm. Like, so do you ever sit down with someone and say, okay, we're going to pitch you to a network. We want you to highlight this part of your personality and downplay this other stuff. Like, do you sort of give media training to a potential reality show before they go and meet the network?
First and foremost, like, these talents don't always meet the network. I will say that during the development phase, because for various reasons, but when they do meet the network, I tell people sort of what the process is. That's not to say, you know, we won't have a conversation beforehand and sort of talk through what the networks are looking for, but it's not training, because either a network, for me, I will say other people probably are a little bit more precise. I want the network to see who they really are, because if you buy the show, that's what you're going to get. So
yeah, like if you try to make Cardi B boardroom ready all the time, you're not going to get the Cardi B that we really want, which is the Cardi B that gives us advice on how to have sex after, you know, given a BJ and then not getting a UTI afterwards, which
you
is
want
real
that.
Advice
yes.
that we all need. So Kristen, how does one get into this career? How'd you find yourself here?
I'm from a small town in New Hampshire. I grew up watching TV, and that was how I learned about the world. Mm. So I was exposed to different cultures, different religions, different backgrounds, different landscapes. And I said, I want to be there. I want to do that. And when you want to do TV, you have two options when you're starting out. And this has all since changed because I'm in my mid-30s. But it was New York or LA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm from the East Coast, I opted to go to New York. So I come to New York. And I have no job prospects. I have no connections. I have only minimal internship experience. And I went to a small liberal arts college, which did have a communications program, but not renowned for their communications program.
Mm-hmm.
I went, and you know the movie Coyote Ugly, where she like does the demo tapes and like drops them off? I Coyote Uglied and like went to like the official CBS, went to the official MTV building. I had printouts of my resume that I handed places and somehow got a call from CBS.
Wow.
And I think also sideline, I did get a little help from like a connection of a connection of a connection of a connection who just sort of helped me meet HR. So I met HR and luckily got a job at CBS. I was in the news department for 3 years and it was great. It was a fantastic experience, but the news didn't allow me to have the creative output that I was looking for. I saw an internship at a company called Left Field Pictures and interviewed there, somehow managed to get that internship. And within a month and a half of that internship, where I was also working two other jobs to make ends meet, somehow managed to get hired, and somebody recognized some semblance of development capabilities in me at that point and really fostered my growth there. And I've been very fortunate. I didn't know what development was when I started in reality television. I just knew I wanted to tell stories. So that's how I landed. And the advice I give people is be proactive. When you talk to somebody in TV, everybody's story is different. You know, nobody has this clear-cut path into their role in television. There's some people that started as like assistants to celebrities. There's other people who just needed to tell stories and started telling their own stories on their own platforms and were recognized. Like there's just such a gamut. If you want to get into television, just start making television.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen, I recently found out that our other friend, our mutual friend, Kristen, there's so many Kristens. So our other friend, Kristen, was telling me how she was considering for a long time trying to get on The Amazing Race. And she sat down with you and you helped her develop this story. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, if someone wants to be on a reality television show, what is their best chance of trying to figure out their own story to get on that show if they're going to audition or send in an application?
I think the best chance is just genuinely being yourself and not filtering. It's the first piece of advice I give to people is it's not a job interview. So like, don't act buttoned up if you're not buttoned up. Don't like censor yourself whatsoever. I also think what's important is to just like have some chutzpah or some charisma. There's nothing worse than talking to someone who has good things to say but can't say it in an exciting way. I'm sure you get that a lot too with like a podcast.
Yeah, totally.
Like, if your enthusiasm levels like
Yeah. You know, we've talked to people before and I feel like they are insulted that we're talking to them because there's no energy and they seem annoyed. And then as soon as we hang up and like we're off recording, they're like, that was amazing. And the energy level goes way high. And I'm like, oh no, where was that?
Yeah. Cause people are reserved once they know that they're being recorded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have that too with like, we'll do casting tapes and we'll have conversations with them on the phone and they're amazing. And they're, you know, these bright, shiny personalities. We Skype them and it's like they're having the saddest day of their life. And that's not gonna cut it.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing a very sad show.
Right. Yeah. Unless the show is about everyone being dead. Yes. Then like that's inappropriate.
Right.
But also that's like the worst reality show ever. It's just like,
even the people on Unsolved Mysteries, they still have a certain level of energy that
That's true. And their husband fell off a roof, you know? Yes. So like
the best advice that you're given is keep your energy level up. Like, you know, drink your coffee before you have that meeting if you want to be on like the Real Housewives of, you know, whatever, Hoboken.
If you want to be a star, people are turning to TikTok. People are turning, like producers are turning to TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. Mm-hmm. We're always looking for the next star that pops, that person that's doing something different. And it's much like the Etsy marketplace. You're looking for something that feels custom and unique. We're doing that when we're looking for people and stories, what feels custom and unique. So yet again, be yourself, you do you, and that's how you're going to move on through in this industry. And also figure out like what your through line is. So it depends on what show you're like looking to do. Like if you're looking to do a competition, you have to sell why you're a great competitor. If you are looking to do a series about home renovations, you have to be able to prove that you have the talent and the capabilities to do home renovations.
What if you want to do Floor is Lava? How, like, because I want to do Floor is Lava more than anything.
Well, you're like an acrobat, so you just need to like prove that. Like, put your leg behind your head and like,
yeah. And flirt with the host. I feel like the host needs to. I like him a lot, and I think he needs to be flirted with.
That's a good
point. There's a lot of skill sets, and that one is in flirting and acrobats.
I mean, Bethany and Kathleen, you both would be phenomenal reality stars. So don't sell yourself short. I think you guys could do it 100%.
Oh, thank you.
You're very kind, but I'm not good in front of the camera. I turn into a pile of mush and I can't.
We actually were involved in a reality show filming and Kathleen wasn't in it because Kathleen was like, nope. And nope. Wouldn't sign the form. I have so much respect for that.
But you know what? I saw the story development of the show and I was like, this is not what I want to be a part of. It was all about fake drama. And I was like, I don't want any part of this. Peace. So, Kristen, what are your favorite reality shows? As someone who develops reality shows, what are your favorite reality shows on television right now or maybe just of all time?
Ooh, that is like the toughest question to answer. I would say I am somebody who watches a little of a lot. I just finished watching Married to Millions. Before that, of course, I was watching Love is Blind like everybody else.
Yeah.
I am a sucker for great documentaries as well, or miniseries. I really love a great miniseries. McMillions was fantastic.
Yeah. Loved McMillions.
Yeah. I just thought it was so well done and the characters were rich. And like so many other people, of course, I watched Tiger King, which was good.
you didn't love it?
I
loved it.
I felt like it was a great water cooler. It's a larger than life talent, characters and story. And I appreciate it for that. There are aspects of the story I probably would have told a little differently, but that's another conversation for another day.
And that's something too, is that you know, with so many jobs, you have a hard time engaging in your career when you're not working, I would imagine. Like, you know, if you're watching another unscripted show, are you able to turn your brain off and not think, oh, I would have run that differently, I would have told that differently?
I think there's always an aspect of that, but I am able to compartmentalize to a point. It's more like I'll see a show and be like, those graphics were phenomenal, that was amazing, or that bite was way overproduced, clearly they were fed it. But I can still enjoy the show. And I should mention, in terms of documentaries, my one of my all-time favorite within the last year is Don't Fuck with Cats. That documentary was so freaking good. I aspire to do something of that, like, gravitas. And then, you know, I think The Pharmacist was great on Netflix as well. Like, I'll geek out of all those miniseries. I love them.
And that's the nice thing is well, I'll ask you this. Is it a good thing that there are so many platforms now that people can pitch a show to, have a show be, you know, debuted? Or does it mean that there's so much competition that it's really hard to get noticed for a project?
I think right now, variety is a double-edged sword. It's great for us as sellers that there are a lot of markets that are buying. But it can also be challenging to have something be successful in a sea of all kinds of programming. People have no shortage of things to watch today. So when you're premiering a show, it's tough to sort of break through the clutter. But it's also nice that if networks A through 7, with A through 7, that's cute.
G through 10.
Clearly, I need more coffee. But if, like, you know, if, like, network ABC says no, then at least I can bring it over to DEF and, like, maybe somebody will be interested.
Yeah.
So, Kristen, we were supposed to hang out next week, and you were like, well, I don't know if I want to be around other people. I'm in the field this month. What does it mean to be in the field?
In the field these days means having a health and safety inspector with you who has been COVID trained. You need to be sterilizing the equipment, the gear, the set location regularly. The whole crew is wearing, you know, PPE gear. Your cast is having masks on hand. And the second the cameras go off, the masks are back on. It's maintaining, you know, social distancing. And it also means regular COVID testing. It's very rewarding to be doing something you love in a time where we've had to put so many things on hold. So it comes with its challenges, but also the program I'm doing is feel good and aspirational. And I think we all could use some good news today and like some good programming.
Yeah. So hell yeah.
Well, and that's what we've been learning as this thing is going on, is that people are really turning to programming and they're turning to art and they're turning to entertainment as a way to cope with all of this and really find some sense of solace, as there's so much that is out of our control right now.
I think TV is extraordinarily important, perhaps now more than ever, because people are utilizing that as their outlet. And it was really challenging to sort of sit on great programs and great ideas and concepts and feel like, are we ever going to do these? So to be able to actually execute TV shows right now is very rewarding. I will say, of course, it also comes with a great responsibility, not to sound like a Marvel movie, but yeah. but like you do, I want to give like the disclaimer, yes, it's great that we're doing TV, but we also need to do it mindfully. We can't just go out and start filming things without being conscientious of the safety and health of everybody participating in the communities that we're sort of descending upon. So, but yeah, I mean, I 100% think it's important to be making television right now. It's important to be making art. Even, you know, I think sadly a lot of people have had to shift what they're doing right now, whether that's career-wise or home life-wise, school-wise, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And to have an outlet that's therapeutic and there's a tangible output is really rewarding.
Well, there it is. There's your love for television in that answer.
I love it.
Like it's rewarding to tell stories, and that, you know, I've said this on the podcast a million times before and I'll say it again. I love my group of very close friends, which Kristen is a part of, because everyone's curious. And that's sort of this curiosity in you is what sparked your career in television.
Yeah. I mean, I also think like to be able to talk to amazing people and to be able to ask the probing questions that as an audience member, you're always wondering, it's a really cool opportunity to get to explore all kinds of people, all kinds of stories. And, you know, touching back on what you were talking about before, there is a huge disappointment that we get a lot of times in development. We get told 90%, no, 90% of the time. But it's that 10% when we get a chance to tell the stories that matter to us and that we believe will help and matter to other people, that is so incredibly rewarding.
What's the one thing that you want people to know about having a career in unscripted television development? What's the one thing you want people to know about your job?
I wish people knew that it wasn't easy, because I think people hear, oh, you make reality shows. Oh, like you just come up with ideas. That sounds so fun. And yes, there are definitely fun aspects to it. And I love the fun aspects, but it's a boatload of work. And a lot of times you're doing a boatload of work that people never get to see. So, you know, I think my job is full of rejection, and I came into this industry being very thin-skinned, being very scared of making a mistake, being very scared to get that no. There's also, you know, oh, you worked 9 months on this project and people will never get to see it. And, you know, like we were talking about the Sex Sisters, there are these incredible people that I just wanted to help get a platform and I couldn't do it. And so that frustration is also a part of the job, but it's just, you got to take those rejections and use it to be fuel to your fire. And now a no is just an opportunity to find a new yes.
I'm writing that down.
Oh, I love that. I'm like clutching my chest because that is freaking profound. A no is just another opportunity to find a yes.
And that applies to all aspects of your life, because you're going to get told no. I mean, we all get told no. But and like, you just have to roll with it. And now I'm pretty damn thick skinned to the point that like when people say yes, I'm like, are you sure?
Oh, I love that. Mic drop, girl. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and feel free to edit me so I sound intelligent.
Get out of here. Girlfriend, see, this is a prime example of imposter syndrome. You are an expert in this field, and own it, girl, own it.
Yeah, I yell at Kathleen whenever she makes a comment about not being intelligent. I will do the same with you, Kristen. We've never met in person, but I will yell at you to raise your self-esteem.
Well, thank you.
Where can people find you on social media, or do you not want to be found on social media?
Don't find me on social media.
Okay, great. Everyone who listens to this podcast is going to be pitching you their new reality show, so maybe that's for the best.
Well, here's what I'd suggest. If you have a great idea, how about you email the lovely girls at Acquired Taste Podcast with the subject line, reality show idea.
Love it. And I'll pass it along to you.
And you just forward it to me.
We will be your manager. We will take 10 to 20%.
Bethany, are you ready to do a 180 and have a career change after listening to all these wonderful, really interesting, brilliant women?
Oh my gosh. I'm so inspired and I'm so excited to keep doing this, because everyone's day looks so different. Like, we just assume everyone is going through the exact same thing we're going through, but everybody, like everyone's coworkers are so different. Everyone has to be aware of so many different things. And I think the thing that stuck out to me the most is that people then see their everyday world differently. What stuck out to you, Kathleen?
You know, it never really occurred to me, and this is with Stephanie, that she would be talking to real life victims just days or hours, moments after news broke about their family's cases or their friends' cases, you know, and she has to be a reporter, but she also has to be sympathetic at the same time.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to me how she deals with that and then goes home and lives her everyday life amidst all of this tragedy and sorrow.
And it's a good reminder that true crime is true.
Yeah.
I've been watching the Lacey Peterson documentary on Hulu. I think it came out a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it's called like The Murder of Lacey Peterson. And it talks about how the news and the coverage of that case and that murder destroyed any chance for there to be a fair trial at all. And you see how much reporters, especially Nancy Grace, were just saying the most outrageous things about Scott Peterson, who ended up getting convicted and is on death row. Like, she was just saying things like he was fishing over her corpse, over her dead body. And there's no proof of that, but she was throwing these things out. And jurors who claimed they weren't watching the news
later admitted they had seen some of this stuff. Like, so we forget that these are people who are being affected by this.
Yeah.
And that's why I really enjoyed Stephanie so much. It's a good reminder.
And with Kristen, just the sheer amount of no's that she gets to shows that she's pitching, just no, no, no. I think she said something like 90% of the time when she's pitching a show, it's no. And I learned a heck of a lot about perseverance from chatting with her.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's fascinating to see how everyone's lives are ruined by their particular jobs.
Precisely.
Well, Kathleen, speaking of learning new things, let's wrap this shindig up. What did you learn this week?
On our Acquire Taste podcast Instagram, you and I have been doing this thing where we take turns a couple times a week posting what our mornings are looking like. And a couple days ago, I did this story about hiking in the forest while it was raining. And I was like, oh man, this smells amazing. I wish I could bottle this up and sell it as a candle or a perfume or something. Well, yeah. There's actually a word for what the forest smells like when it rains. And
really?
That word is petrichor.
How do you spell that? Petrichor.
Let me check. I spelled it phonetically in my notes. It's P-E-T-R-I-C-O-R. I'm going to play the dictionary pronunciation of it from the Googles for you. Here you go.
Okay.
Petrichor.
And what is the definition of it?
It's a pleasant smell that frequently accompanies the first rain after a long period of warm, dry weather.
I love that smell. I had no idea there was a word for it.
Ah, yes, man.
It's wonderful.
So good. It makes me so horny.
Yeah, I was a little jealous of you. I did then jump on our Instagram story and, you know, sort of throw my head in my hands, but
taste buds. If you haven't seen this story yet, I just put it up in our highlights today. You can go into our main profile and there's a little highlight there that says good morning. So you can check out all of our videos there.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
Of course. Bethany, what did you learn this week?
Okay. We are getting into high holy season. Spooky things are starting to come into stores. If you go to Michael's Crafts, they have an amazing new line of spooky things. Thanks to Fallon, my friend who let me know that Michael's is stocking some pretty legit stuff right now. One of the things you can get at Michael's, this is not an ad for Michael's, is a little net baggie filled with little plastic skulls.
Oh, they're so cute, Bethany.
They're adorable. They're about the size of, I don't know, a golf ball-ish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you're looking for a way to slowly erode the sanity of your loved ones, I bought these and then I wrote underneath on the bottom of them 7 days in Sharpie because I'm constantly trying to threaten my boyfriend with murder. And I hid them all over the house and like in his things. And so he kept finding these tiny skulls all weekend. And every time he found them, he would yell and scream. And it was very fun for me. So if you're looking for a way to freak out, you know, your family or your coworkers or just like strangers, if you go outside and you want to maybe put one under a bush, pick up these little plastic skulls. I think a bag of them was like $7 and you get 10 or 12 of them and then you can just like write things on them and scare people.
Oh, they're so cute. I really want to spray paint them in rainbow colors to make it spooky.
Oh, you totally could. Yeah.
Spooky yet inviting.
Yeah, spooky yet filled with pride.
Yes. And you know what, Bethany? Mm-hmm. On the bottom of one of those skulls, you should write, I'm coming for your penis, Dennis.
Done and done, my friend. Kathleen, where can people find you on social media?
At WebGirlKathleen on everything. How about you, Bethany?
I'm Radio Bethany on Twitter, Miss Bethany Watson on the Instagrams.
If you want to follow this podcast, you can do so on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Instagram at Acquired Taste Podcast.
On Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast. Plus, make sure you check out the fan group. There are a lot of really and truly incredible people in there.
Definitely. You can send us snail mail, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
And if you want to send us an email, our email address is anacquiredtastepodcast@gmail.com.
You can also give us a telephone call. Every week we play your voicemails at the end. They are my favorite parts of our episodes. You people are so damn funny. You can give us a call at 917-994-0353.
And wherever you listen to this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps us move up in the ranks and, you know, so that more people can discuss discover us.
Our podcast is edited by Charlotte Gartenberg. You can follow her on Twitter at Chargar, on Instagram at lit_fuck.
You know, so many people responded to the notes at the end of our last bonus episode about Adele, whose boyfriend said he would never marry her. You know, the notes that Charlotte wrote and then you recorded at the end.
Yes.
So much amazing response from that. So Taste Buds, thank you. We are going to pass on all of that.
Definitely. This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
I'm feeling a little visceral today.
Do some fire breathing. And Taste Buds, this is what you had to say this week.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. I am a longtime listener, first-time caller from St. Louis, Missouri. My name is Lana, and I just wanted to say thanks to Bethany for talking about people in your peripheral vision. Every week when the podcast comes out, I wait to listen to it for my long run. I'm a runner, and so I run a 10K every weekend, and I'm sure everyone on the path behind me on the trail that I was running was enjoying watching my hands up in the air, you know, moving my fingers for my peripheral vision test, as Bethany was describing, talking about eyeballs. So I just thought I'd call and hopefully give somebody a laugh, because I'm sure some people were laughing at me. Love you, girls. Bye.
Bethany, I just want you to know, recently, the thing about the eyes, that was fascinating. I was like, wow. I actually played it back and listened to it again. I'm like, that is so interesting. So I was just going to say that. And if you're wondering what I do for a living, I'm a teacher. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, ladies. I was just listening to the podcast when you were talking about Kathleen's Peloton situation, and my heart is breaking. I know exactly how this feels. And I'm wondering, like, okay, I don't want to step on anyone's toes or be potentially upsetting, but I found a hack to get a Peloton for less than $500. So if you look online, there's certain styles of bikes that run $300, $350, and then you can set it up really easy with two or three small accessories that are inexpensive, and download the Peloton app on your phone or a tablet, and you can get the full use of a Peloton without the big price tag.
Hello, Bethany and Kathleen. I am listening to your latest episode. This is Chase Bud Jenna, by the way. And I had to stop you because, or stop myself from listening, rather, and call you because Kathleen's talking about the flavor graveyard at Ben & Jerry's. And I will tell you that at least of several years ago when I visited the Ben & Jerry's factory, it does exist in real life. It was this teeny little graveyard, and you walked through like this gate, and it was just charming and weird and awesome, and they had little headstones for all the flavors. So unless they tore it down, it does exist for real. Also, the flavor that Bethany is talking about, the Stephen Colbert flavor, is Americone Dream, which is my favorite. And if you are into other late night show flavors, the Tonight Dough is also really good because it's a combination of two different cookie doughs. All right, this has been your ice cream information voicemail. Hope you're having a super sexy day. Bye.
Hi, ladies. This is the first time I'm calling. My name is Lauren, and I was listening to this week's podcast, and I literally, it was about when, Kathleen, you were talking about your everything with the Peloton, and I had to literally stop halfway through to call because I've been here, not quite with the Peloton, but I was with someone when I had a gym membership, and I wasn't using it, and I was continuing to pay for it, and then I finally, like, got rid of it. And by the time that month passed and I got a new gym membership, the first thing that came out of his mouth was, like, oh, well, like, you better use it, or at least, even though it was my money and I was paying for it, he had nothing to do with it. We're not together anymore. That is totally fine, and everything is wonderful now. I had that same kind of struggle of wanting to work out and wanting to get something consistent. And, like, I'm a fitness instructor, and I wasn't working out nearly as much or at all. So for me to go out and tell people, like, yes, work out, take my classes, this would be great, like, you should be doing this, I was a hypocrite because I wasn't doing it myself.
Hey, Bethany. Hey, Kathleen. This is Caitlin from Richmond. I was just listening to the most recent episode this week, and literally had to pause it to call you guys. It's Kathleen talking about Neil and the issues with the Peloton bike and her, you know, not being on the same page as him when it comes to exercise. My boyfriend and I literally had the same conversation recently where he made a comment about me not using my gym membership as much. And I just want to say, Kathleen, I know you got choked up during it, talking about it. I totally feel that. I think men just think differently than women do, especially about exercise. I think maybe talking to our guys a little bit about how we feel about our bodies, about, you know, self-image is really important, to maybe get Neil, you know, and my boyfriend on the same page as how we're feeling. So Kathleen, I just wanted to say I feel you. Thank you so much for bringing this up. It meant a lot to me. And I hope you ladies have a fabulous day. Bye.